Hello, I'm Oliver Wang.
And I'm Morgan Rhodes. Welcome to Heat Rocks.
What you're about to listen to is our special live and direct episode of Heat Rocks, where we brought the show to the people on a beautiful Saturday in downtown Los Angeles.
We wanted to celebrate the launch of the show, so on November the 11th, we did a pop-up version of the show as part of the Voyager Institute, a film and music lecture series happening at a really cool space called the Resident Bar.
Our guest was Grammy-nominated singer Bee Slade,
who chose Janet Jackson's critically acclaimed Rhythm Nation 1814 as his heat rock. Have a listen.
Morgan, for our live audience, can you explain what a heat rock is?
A heat rock is a DJ term for a hot record, but for us it's a banger, arson, fire, flammable, just something hot.
Hey.
In every episode, we invite a guest to join us to talk about one of their heat rocks. Today, we will be deep diving together into Janet Jackson's Rhythm Nation 1814, released 28 years and 2 months ago in the fall of 1989.
We are a nation with no geographic boundaries, bound together through our beliefs. We are like-minded individuals, sharing a common vision, pushing toward a world rid of color lines. Five, four,
three.
If Big Brother Michael Jackson was the definitive pop star at the beginning of the 1980s, it was little sister Janet Jackson who secured the title by decade's end. She'd already put the world on notice with her smash 1986 album, Control, but Rhythm Nation hit that proverbial next level. Rhythm Nation is the first and only album to have seven different singles in the top five. Not even Thriller reached that mark. And the only album to ever produce three number one hit songs in three separate calendar years. More than just its commercial success, though, Rhythm Nation has been equally celebrated as a concept album whose social consciousness has been compared to Marvin Gaye's What's Going On. To quote The Atlantic's Joseph Vogel, it was, quote, a transformative work that arrived at a transformative moment, unquote, speaking to the ambivalences and anxieties facing Americans, especially African Americans, in the wake of the Reagan era. To quote Janet herself, I want people to realize the urgency. I want to grab their attention. Music is my way of doing that.
The homeless problem.
Good looks and
die of violence.
Tiananmen Square today.
Up to the adults to teach the children.
Period. A pain reliever. The bullets.
Attempting past money.
Violent crimes are on the uprise.
So frustrating.
To talk about Rhythm Nation 1814, we invited one of the biggest Janet Jackson fanatics we could find, a self-described Rhythm Nationpedia, singer, songwriter, Bee Slade.
Hey, 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 hey.
That's fire. That's a heat rock right there.
Thank you.
Despite what these stilettos might otherwise suggest, I'm 5'1". And very often in the store, I'll see something on a shelf that I like, but I can't reach. Too high. I gotta get somebody to help me. And that's what it's like to try and sing along with Bee Slade. You like it, but you can't reach it. It's too high. You gotta get somebody to help you.
That's crazy.
He's out here bringing good things to life like GE, with slick arrangements, harmonies, lyrics to go that require introspection and honesty. He's worked with Faith Evans, Shanice, Chaka Khan, geez, all in the name of good music and forward-thinking progress. His new self-titled album dropped Friday. Check for it. And be prepared to be inspired, to be moved, to groove, and to be slayed. Welcome to the show. Welcome to Heat Rocks, Be Slayed.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start with something very basic, or maybe not that basic. Why did you want to talk about Janet Jackson, and why did you want to talk about this specific album?
This album was the reason why I even became an artist. It came at a really pivotal time, you know, in my life. And the full feature length, there was a, actually it was a film short, not a feature length of the album on MTV at that time. She had to tell a musical and it was like a half hour show. And it was a film short directed by Dominique Sana, someone who also directed a Swordfish. It just caught my attention and it put me on the right path right when I was on that fence of doing the right thing or the wrong thing, especially its education themes. And it's nice to laugh, but don't be the joke, or we are in a race between education and catastrophe. It still rings true today. So it really had a cultural impact, and it also had a personal impact because it put me on the right path to use my gifts and talents to bring attention to issues outside of my own world, but to talk about our world and do it in a funky ass way. You know what I mean? Multi-dab. Okay.
We invited you, and we're so glad to have you with us. But one of the reasons we wanted you here was we know that you're a Janet Jackson fanatic. I want to shout out my brother, John, because, I love my brother and I know my brother loves me. You gotta love someone to give them floor seat tickets to go see Janet Jackson, right?
Yes.
I
want
to shout out John. So we went together and at some point, I looked up at the screen and from the back, I was like, yo, I just saw an orange wig. I was like, I feel like that's my homeboy. I feel like that's B. Slade, but I couldn't see. All I could see was the profile. Mm-hmm. All I could see was lips moving. I was like, yo, if this is not him, this is somebody that knows every single word to all the songs, right? And then they went wide, and I was like, yo, that's B. Slade, right? So that concert for my brother and I, one of the things he said to me on the way home is she had so many hits that she could only get to like even half of a verse of each song.
Right.
So for me, it just took me back through the last 20 years. Of course, this album's 28 years old. Mm-hmm. What was your experience at that show?
Well, I had side seats. Her drummer and I are real good friends, Little John. And somehow the front of house engineer saw where we was at. Someone did not show up. They had front row seats. How do you not show up? Say, I got something else to do. Like,
right.
I mean, don't
right.
we have Netflix or not?
Nah? You right,
know what I mean?
Right.
So, yeah. So I ended up with the front row seats. First time I'd ever been in the front row of anyone's concert.
Mm.
Okay.
Mm.
Let alone, you know, a Janet Jackson, you know, my entertainment, you know, inspiration.
Sure.
And so to see that, I had been behind the scenes working with Snoop and Chaka and Missy and, you know, behind the scenes, I had lost my own art somewhere along the way. And this re-inspired me when I saw the State of the World tour. And it really meant a lot to me because I was hoping she would return back to a lot of the political themes that she had been addressing in Rhythm Nation. Because if we could talk about that now, especially now in these times, how much more impactful could it be? And she did exactly what I thought she would do. She came out addressing prejudice and ignorance and bigotry and all of the things that are going on, using her talents for something outside of her own ambition and artistic ego. And I just applaud that about her.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons why I still love her to this day.
Yeah. Well, let's actually spin back to the point that B was talking about a moment ago, which is about Rhythm Nation as a social commentary album. And I think spinning back to my own thoughts about the album at the time, I just knew it through the hits. I didn't sit down with the album. I didn't go, you know, end to end with it. So all I knew were the main singles and the videos. And of course, we are absolutely going to get to sort of the hits off of it. But really, the album itself was much more than just, here's some really good number one jams. Let's briefly take a look at, this is a clip from from Knowledge, which was not a single, but yet there's a video for it.
Yeah. One of my faves.
One, two,
three,
four.
Prejudice.
No.
Ignorance.
No.
Bigotry.
No.
Illiteracy.
No.
One, two,
three.
When you first sat with it and listened to the whole thing, what was it about the commentary on it and what she was trying to achieve with this album beyond, again, just making hits with Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis? What was it that struck you then, and what lingers with you still today?
At that time, there were still cassettes, and the cassette itself was black. It was the first time I had seen black presented as a black artist, black cover, in a positive way. So that's the first thing that stuck with me, and that it wasn't in color. I believe her label begged her to do the album in color, but she just felt that, you know, it was better to make it black and white and make all people different shades of gray. And I thought that was an interesting aspect to, or approach to take to right. music.
And so many of the videos from this album are in black and white. Which
yes.
Goes Issue that
Much,
thing as well.
The Knowledge, which is, you can't find that anywhere except on the telemusical that I was speaking of, is a 30-minute film, a short presentation that was debuted on MTV right before the album came out. And then Rhythm Nation itself, and then Love Will Never Do was also a black and white, but it didn't have anything to do with the political construct of things. But the first color video that we saw from the video was actually Escapade, which was it was good. It made that video stand out that much more because we'd only seen black and white. I'm talking about the singles, the 12-inch singles. Everything was in black and white, and to finally see some color, it just busted out totally. January 1990 AMAs is where she debuted that.
Right.
And in terms of the other half of it, when you think back almost 30 years later, what is it about the content and the ideas on the album that still linger with you?
That we're still dealing with the same bullshit today.
Mm. Right.
That's the most striking thing, that you would think that by now we would have progressed as a people with as much technology as we have. We've separated ourselves more with our ideologies than we have with the commonality of music. That's right.
Right.
It's okay to clap at any time you feel it, because I'm going to be preaching up in air. You know, I mean, it starts off with, to me, if you really want to understand the album, you have to start with the last track of the album, then go to number one.
In complete darkness, we are all the same. It is only our knowledge and wisdom that separates us. Don't let your eyes deceive you.
Stop right there. So that time, that bell that's going on right there, that's how the album ends, but it's actually the end of the album is the beginning of the album. How the whole continuity of the album works is really from the last track into number one, the continuity of it. It's a loop.
Yeah, Kendrick Lamar didn't invent that with Dan, so yeah.
Yeah, it's been going on for a while. It was also the first time we saw segues in her albums being introduced, which she went on to do in the Janet album and in the Velvet Rope album and the All For You album. You know, all subsequent records, I believe. Those interludes became almost synonymous with the Jackson, Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis, you know, Trinity. Mm.
Morgan, I know you have some thoughts on this as well.
Well, just to put 1989, you know, into context to understand how groundbreaking Rhythm Nation was, if you consider the top five.
Yes.
The top five that year were Paula Abdul, Straight Up Now Tell Me.
Yes.
Poison, Every Rose Has Its Thorns. Bobby Brown, My Prerogative, which also was a jam.
Yes.
Right? And then you also had Paula Abdul, Chicago, Look Away. So it was and Milli Vanilli.
Right.
So this burst out on the scene as something completely different politically, because 1989 was a hotbed of politics, right?
Yes.
You had, Yusef Hawkins, the situation in Bensonhurst. You had Bernard Goetz, who had acted a fool on the subway and shot the young men. You had the Central Park Five. So she had a lot of themes. So to
Berlin Wall.
Berlin Wall.
Yeah. Tiananmen Square.
The Bush years.
Yeah.
So there was a lot going on.
Oh, the Stockton shooting on the
Stockton
playground.
Shooting, right? And the shooting in
school.
Miami.
Yeah.
So she had a lot to talk about. It's risky now to speak controversially and politically, but it certainly was in 1989. What is the risk for an artist to take a stand like that?
Well, I'm sure at that time, the people who were running A&M, like Gil Friesen and Charlie Minor, must have been like, we're not sure if we want to follow a pop smash success up with something that is so, I don't know, could be considered heavy, you know? And even with this album, she could have sequenced it in a different way where it wasn't as heavy, but she dealt with everything at the very beginning.
She did.
You know, from the intro pledge into Rhythm Nation, into State of the World, into The Knowledge. Of course, the next interlude had to be Get the Point.
Right.
Good. Now let's dance.
Exactly.
And to Miss You Much, because it was just back to back to back. You're going to deal with this. And I remember her saying that, you know, Control was about her world and this was about our world. And Jimmy was saying, while we, Jimmy Jam, was saying that while we have the people's attention with Control, 8 million copies sold worldwide, you know, this is the time while we have their attention, let's do something about what we're seeing instead of just going along with it. And I just applaud producers and artists who, I'm not saying everyone has to have a socially conscious record, but how can you truly be, in the words of Nina Simone, how can you be an artist and not reflect your times?
Right.
And I just totally respect that trio for taking that time and the label for finally giving in. And it was not an easy battle. Many people wanted her to do a Control 2.
If I understand it, they actually wanted her to name the album Control 2. That's how much they wanted a Control 2.
Control 2. I had heard that there was also a working title called Scandal. Jimmy denied that.
Yeah, oh, right. Because of everything that was happening with the Jackson family at the time.
At the time.
Right.
You know, Toya was, you know, whatever, all that was going on. And so, yeah, you know, come on, you know, with the Snakes and the Playboy and blah, 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 and Psychic Network and all that stuff. There was a lot going on in the Jackson family at that time.
To say the least. Yeah.
And so, you know, I could see how that could possibly work. As a matter of fact, on the first single that came out in August of 89, the B-side of Miss You Much was actually a song called You Need Me. That was about her growing up with her father. So I guess I don't know how that ended up as a B-side, maybe to appease the label at the time. I don't know. But I liked it. It was a badass jam. You know what I mean? But I just don't think them as a trio wanted to go into a full album that addressed those types of themes.
Can we talk a little bit more about the production around the album and what it is that Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis brought to it, you know, recording this thing in Minneapolis as they did with Control and having that Minneapolis sound. I mean, there are certain songs in here that sound very Prince-esque, and it's kind of amazing they couldn't get Prince to just drive across town and pop in for, maybe like a 10-minute interlude,
It's funny that you say that. He was busy.
He was busy.
Doing that Batman sound.
But it also
that
had a lot
badass.
Of... It also had a lot of a New Jack Swing to it. There were some Teddy Riley moments that I thought.
Absolutely. Prince was actually, I guess it was offered to him at first. The original idea for Love Will Never Do, which was the, well, second to last single, I think State of the World technically was the eighth last single they released in 91. But Love Will Never Do was supposed to be a duet with Prince and Janet, which I could, if you listen to it, it kind of would have worked. I would have loved to have seen that happen, but it didn't for whatever reason. Yeah. So I feel like their production at that time, I could certainly tell that they kept certain sounds. Like there's this, play the beginning of Miss You Much. Can I go back one track?
Get
that
the point.
Sound. Hear that sound in the background?
Good. Let's dance.
This is a signature Jackson, Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis signal. This lets you know that a Janet Jackson song is about to play in the club. That sound is associated with their sound was first heard in the song Nasty. You hear it right before the beginning of the second verse, really strong.
Right.
And they kept certain bass lines and certain drum sounds, particularly out of the Insonic, I'm not sure if it was the M1, I'm not sure which synthesizer, which sampler it was, but it was a certain Mirage. It was the Mirage. They got a new drum machine when Rhythm Nation came out. So you could hear that the drums got more industrial. It sounded very metallic. It had a very, aggressive for a female artist. You wouldn't think the beats would be that hard, but you have to remember Jan's a tomboy. She grew up with a bunch of brothers. So she didn't want any soft ass beats. They wanted to be super hard and no, just cause I'm a girl doesn't mean I can't still kick ass. I just like that she resisted that, you know, misogynistic, you know, suggestion of music artists and the industry that women have to be soft. She was aggressive, you know, and I think that's important.
Back to Morgan's point about thinking about the year in which this comes out. I mean, you mentioned all the pop hits, but 1989 is the beginning or in that beginning era of hip hop's dominance. So
yes.
Public Enemy's in the background of this. BDP's in the background of all
absolutely.
This. NWA's in the background
Beastie
of all
Boys
this.
Beastie Boys, too.
Right. And so the idea that Jimmy Jam or Terry Lewis would go out and get a new drum machine and play around with it and really punch up that sound, I think is also on some level, it's in conversation, whether directly or implicitly, with what's happening sonically via hip-hop.
And a lot of times people say that this is where Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, you know, kind of got their New Jack Swing nuances, but actually they were already on a New Jack Swing vibe on the song Nasty from 1986. It already had a 16th triplet syncopation to it. So I think that it could have been the other way around. However, New Jack Swing, as it relates to Teddy Riley at that time was the dominant sound, yeah. Right. Which was a very Virginia-based go-go, very percussive sound. A go-go comes from a go-go's, the a go-go bell. That's it. You know, that African, the tribes and all the things that come with percussion were very dominant for the first time in radio like we had never seen before. And if you listen to Rhythm Nation, if you listen to You Need Me, if you listen to a B-side called The Skin Game, if you listen to The Knowledge, you will hear that even all right. That's church.
Right.
That's a tambourine. That's a choir. Come on now. Am I talking about that? It's all of those things that feel righteous and touch our souls and makes us move. It is a sort of gospel.
Yeah. Yes. Let's go back to The Knowledge real quick.
Yes.
And then Morgan, I want to hear your thoughts on what you hear in the Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis, Janet Jackson sound of this era.
Sure.
There goes that sound again. One, two. One, two. One, two. Industrial crashes. They predate black or white many years. Michael got industrial after this. I noticed that.
Yeah.
Michael got very industrial. Rhythm Nation definitely influenced the Dangerous album. You can't tell me it did.
So Morgan, what do you think about when you hear a lot of the production from this moment?
You know, for me, it's dancey. It sounds like late 80s, early 90s dance music to me. Mm-hmm. It sounds like the mix of disco going into house, mm-hmm. right? With a little bit of, to what you mentioned, go-go. Mm-hmm. And it reminds me a lot of the artists that were out at that time. I mean, as soon as you dropped that, I thought of Alexander O'Neill.
Me too, Keith Sweat.
For sure.
Yeah.
1989 was a good year. Right. And so what's surprising about the choice of tempo is that it would be easy to get so dancey that you forget about the message. But to be dancing like that to the beat on State of the World Today and be talking about State of the World Today lets me know you can have a message without being preachy. And so that's what I liked about this album, that it was up tempo, it was dancey, and she was dropping some heats. I wanted you to talk about the sequencing because it's political for a few tracks.
Yes.
But then at the end, it gets soft and buttery.
Yes, absolutely.
You know what I'm talking about.
Absolutely. Well, you know, there's always some cooing and moaning with Janet,
right.
You know, so, you know, they act like it's something new, but she'd been doing that since the Control record.
Right.
Actually, funny how time flies.
Right.
But, usually you can't put the same type of sensual and, you know, political themes on the same album, but the chronological order of how it was put together made it seamless, which is really another testament to the brilliance of, how that team puts things together. But what's interesting about the single Miss You Much, it didn't give anything away about what the full content of the entire piece would do. I think had she started with Rhythm Nation, I'm not sure if the consumers would have been. I think they would have still bought by default, but I think it was a smart move to go with a more pop love song, dance song,
right.
than it would be to come out the box. And it was contemplated, should we just come out with Rhythm Nation first? And from what I was told, they decided to go with Miss You Much at the end. Yeah.
We'll be back with more of our conversation with B. Slade about Rhythm Nation 1814 after a brief word from our fellow Max Fun podcasts.
Max FunCon tickets are on sale now at maxfuncon.com. Watch stand-up comedy on a mountain. Roll out of bed after a dance party to see a live podcast taping. Take classes from amazing teachers with the most supportive group of people you'll ever meet. Make a bunch of friends and eat a ton of s'mores. Come to Max Fun Con at Lake Arrowhead, California, the second weekend of June for friendship, comedy, and creativity. Get your ticket now at maxfuncon.com.
I'm Biz.
And I'm Teresa.
We host the podcast One Bad Mother. We're a podcast for when you have a new baby and motherhood is not what you expected it would be.
We're a podcast for when you're working full time, parenting the rest of the time, and parenthood is not what you expected it would be.
We're a podcast for when you decided to stay home with your kid full time, and it's not what you expected it would be.
We are a podcast for when your kid does something that you didn't expect a child of yours would ever do, and you reacted in a way you never thought you would.
Why would you put a hose into the mail slot and turn it on?
We are a podcast for moms, dads, parents of all kinds.
We're even a podcast for people who are not yet parents or are not even sure they want to be parents.
One Bad Mother. Find us on MaximumFun.org, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on Heat Rocks talking about Janet Jackson's Rhythm Nation 1814 with our live audience.
Hey!
and special guest B. Slade.
Yeah. One of the things that I think gets lost, and it might be a generational thing, is the contributions that Janet Jackson made to future artists. Mm. What stands out most in my mind is Beyonce.
Absolutely.
No formation without rhythm nation. Right. The military. Okay, shout out.
Yeah, for real.
To be able to be political and conscious and progressive and woke as a black woman was a risk in 1989. It's a risk today. But if you look at Beyonce's performance at the Super Bowl, you are looking at Rhythm Nation all over again. Listening to Lemonade, which is a beautiful visual conceptual album, just like Rhythm Nation was. But particularly the song Freedom with Kendrick Lamar, to me, sounds a lot thematically and arrangement-wise like Rhythm Nation.
And the aggression.
For sure.
Keep on running, cause the winner don't quit on themselves.
So to me, Janet Jackson walked through that door, and she walked through that door so that the future generations, and certainly black women, would be able to stand in their truth in the biggest forum. Now that's the legacy that she gave Beyonce. What has she given you as an artist?
To just, you know, stay true to yourself and, you know, work hard, you know. She often would say, like, you know, you can't expect things to just fall in your lap. You have to work hard for it. And part of the discipline of the Jackson family in general, say what you want to say, but you cannot deny that there's a certain work ethic. Even with Beyonce, you see there's a certain discipline and work ethic that takes people to the championship level and to be able to perform under all of that pressure. You know, a lot of times we just take it for granted that somebody like a Beyonce just, you know, goes on the Super Bowl and nails it like that. But imagine the entire world is watching you at that time and you have to deliver, and Pepsi's depending on you to not mess up. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
So that's an unbelievable amount of pressure. But sometimes as artists, we kind of write artists off because we're so creative, but we're really athletic as well. We do our own stunts. You know, we're really out there getting into the trenches. When we believe in something, we go all the way. And, she still has the highest debut tour, sales and success in history. Janet Jackson still to this day, the Rhythm Nation debut world tour is still the number one debut, you know, tour ever. Period.
I've asked this of other, guests. What does this artist mean to you? What does Janet Jackson mean to you?
Well, it just so happens that we have the same birthday, May 16th. Mm-hmm. So we're both Tauruses. All the Tauruses in the building. Multi-dab. resilience. You know, people forget, like, during the control, to even get to control, she had to stand up to her father.
Sure.
She had to, like, say, I don't want you to be my manager anymore, which, I don't know. Joe didn't look like someone you'd want to say that to.
Right.
So for her to find it within herself as the baby of the Jackson clan to actually stand up to her father and say, look, I love you, but there's something I want to be taken seriously as an artist. That resonated with me. There would be no way to Rhythm Nation. Who would care about a Rhythm Nation without a control?
Right.
But that was a risk in and of itself. So I think that's the part that moves me the most, is that for her to be that strong, that young, and to go after what she wants and to defy the odds. We all need that as artists, because sometimes our parents or our friends or our schools or the way we're raised, they don't agree with our artistic expression. And she knew she wanted to be taken seriously. And I just give her snaps for that.
When she was 17, she did what people told her.
Right.
But then after that,
she was in control.
That she was in control.
I was just imagining what her parents were looking like, just like listening to Control. Like,
what?
Really? Right. This is what you're doing?
Let's dig back into the songs off the Rhythm Nation. Okay. B. Slade,
yes.
What is the fire track for you on this album?
The fire track is the title track, Rhythm Nation, hands down.
Fire.
This is the test. No struggle, no progress. Lend a hand to help your brother do his best. Things are getting worse. We have to make them better. It's time to give a damn. Let's work together. People of the world today, are we looking for a better way of life? We are a part of the Rhythm Nation. People of the world, unite. Strengthen numbers. We can get it right one time. We are a part of the Rhythm Nation. It means music doesn't see a color or a gender or a background or an orientation. It's just funky. One nation under a groove is like the back thought behind this piece. Particularly if you listen to the loop. That is Sly and the Family Stone from 1969. Thank you for letting me be myself. Mm-hmm. Thank you for letting me be myself again. All right. But that was a multicultural band.
Right.
Female and male, multi-gendered band.
Yes.
And so it made sense that that would be a one measure loop that they'd use in this, because it's once again music unifying people. I am everyday people, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Don't call me nigga, Whitey. Don't call me Whitey, nigga. This is someone who already, Sly Stone was already controversial.
Right.
But use that to raise the consciousness of people in a way that James Brown even couldn't get into the mixture of crowds.
Right.
Sly Stone made it for all races. The funk was for all, whereas James Brown particularly was adored by the African-American community. And I think that made sense to use that loop. Another thing that's interesting about Rhythm Nation is that it sounds like a rap song. It doesn't sound like an R&B song. We hadn't seen samples in R&B. I think the closest we got to that was, you know, probably Guy, you know, right, with the first album with Groove Me, or maybe Vanessa Williams with The Right Stuff. There was a few samples in that song.
Right.
But in a commercial pop way, this was the first time we heard a singer take a rap track, and hip hop was like killing at that time. Fight the Power by Public Enemy, from the Do the Right Thing soundtrack was also killing at that time. So it made us look at her like, wow, she is the cool Jackson. Because Michael, he had his staple, but she always had, even in choreography, a little bit closer touch to what was going on in the streets at the time. At the end of the Rhythm Nation video, you see her bust into the Running Man. That had just come out. So what does a Jackson know about what we as the kids at school know about? That says a lot to how much she's paying attention to what was going on and wanting to reach young people. And this, that loop, just that's just looping over and over again. That's like something Public Enemy would do, not a Jackson would do.
And also just the military uniforms that her and her dancers are dressed in always makes me think of Public Enemy's S1W
security
crew.
Absolutely. Right. For some reason, this video, when I first saw it in his whole piece of the whole film short, it had a very dystopian feeling to it. It almost was eerie. It was so serious. It was eerie because I'd never seen, first of all, we'd never seen choreography like that before. Shout out to Anthony Thomas. Anthony Bam Bam Thomas is the one who did all this choreo for this tour. Just shout out to him for coming up with all of this. His, some of his, assistants and co-choreographers were Lavelle Smith, who wanted to work with Beyonce, and, Terry Bixler, who came up with the chair routine for Miss You Much. But the collaborative effort of seeing that type of stark, almost drill-like, you know, we see Beyonce actually go into that in Ring the Alarm from her VMA performance. You'll see a Rhythm Nation breakdown, that very militant, almost drill that happened. We had never seen anything like that before. It actually, this whole piece reminds me vaguely of a movie called Fahrenheit 451. If you look at what they were wearing, and 451 was on the side of their necks, and the costuming from Rhythm Nation, you'll see 1814 on the side and on the top. And that was basically her nodding to the national anthem. You know, Francis Scott Key wrote the national anthem in 1814. So she was saying that this could possibly be like a new national anthem for dancers or musicians to come together. And that's where 1814 came in. It just so happened coincidentally that R was the 18th letter of the alphabet and N was the 14th. But they were, I was told that was just something they found out after the fact, and it almost confirmed that they were supposed to do that. Yeah.
Since you mentioned the dancing, I just took a clip out of Miss You Much, which takes out some of the parts where she's just interacting with her dancers, but we can watch this part of it.
Okay. That's Lavelle Smith. That's Art Palmer. That's Jimmy Locust.
So Miss You Much is my fire track because as a song, I think it's amazing. And every time I watch this video and just the fluidity of the move, the way they snap into place. And I feel like this was really, this late 80s was the pinnacle of people having incredibly good choreography and music videos. And that kind of goes away. And then Beyonce brings it back a little bit. Right. But this moment between her, Michael, everyone else in the 80s, just the sheer level of dancing and credibility, I just invented a word, was remarkable. So yeah, can we talk a little bit about just the quality of dancing here?
Well, I was going to say earlier to your point about Rhythm Nation, what struck me about that video and that dancing is it's very military, which to me was very woke because it shouts out the Black Liberation Army, the Black Panther Army. And it also shouts out, Fight the Power, which, you know, you have the marchers in the background. Yes. Fight the Power was a song for Do the Right Thing, but they were originally wanting to do a hip hop version of Lift Every Voice and Sing. Mm-hmm. So they went another way, but it really was politicized to me. It was strong because there were so many people, strength in numbers, the blacks looked like Professor Griff out there. Some of this choreography to me, I thought was very dance music, but I saw a little Crip walk in there.
Absolutely.
Did you see that?
Yeah, absolutely.
So it was very street, but it was also very dancey, very glossy. But those were her shows. I went to the Rhythm Nation tour at the Coliseum. And shout out to the Coliseum. and that was one thing that we were just mesmerized, surely by the vocal performances, but absolutely by the choreography and how many people were on stage with her at the time.
This is interesting. This was shot on the Charlie Chaplin stage at the, you know, right on La Brea, Jim Henson Studios now, used to formerly be A&M. This was shot on Charlie Chaplin stage. So this whole thing was set up that way. So there's a lot of history in where it was filmed. There's a lot of legacy in the actual grounds where it was filmed. So I'm sure a lot of that magic, you know, was also there. And then they recorded We Are the World at that same lot. So there's a lot of historical, you know, significance to it being, you know, shot there in particular, and that it's right here in LA. Like these moments were actually captured here in this city. It's unbelievable to think it's right down the street.
I love that you know all this. This is exactly why we do this podcast, is because of moments like this where you can point out every single dancer by name in the video and talk about the set. So shout out to B. Slade for just bringing the knowledge
now.
Thank you. For sure.
Thank you. The knowledge.
No pun intended. No pun intended.
Okay.
Morgan, do you have a sleeper jam off of here?
It's sleeper / fire because it's such fire. I don't know why people would sleep on it. But for me, it's Love Will Never Do.
So these sections here were supposed to be Prince singing. That verse was supposed to be Prince.
Video is this is crazy. Antonio Sabato Jr., Jaimon Hansu. I thank God for this video. This is a great video. And also very artistic. I mean, Herbert's had also done Cherish for Madonna.
That's right.
But this one is
Chris Isaacs, I think.
Yeah. This is a groundbreaking video and a great song. The remixes were good, but I like the original.
Yeah, I like the fact that we had never seen Janet in this way before. This is the first time we kind of saw where she was headed for the Janet album. Mm-hmm. She was showing us a little skin. So I remember it being a real big situation to see her looking like
real
that.
Real big,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, real big situation. Really
big.
Yes.
For sure.
What's your sleeper jam?
Someday Is Tonight.
Mm.
Which features Herb Alpert, who was the A in A&M, on trumpet on this piece. I'm really excited.
We're having you back for every show.
Here we are, just you and me. Got something for you, baby. Wait and see. Tonight.
Yeah, I love that. Just that was before any time, any place. That was before, you know. So it was just the chords of that. And at the end, if you guys go and listen to it, there's just an amazing trumpet solo by Herb Albert from Tijuana Brass. That's just is hypnotic. It's completely hypnotic.
You have already covered a song off of this. We saw it at the very beginning. You've done All Right. Mm-hmm. If you had to pick another song off of this to cover, remix, what have you, what would you choose?
Living in a World They Didn't Make. Yeah. Children are called the future of an adult world. They are born with spirits so innocent until we teach them how to hate. Add to the world's confusion, we teach our kids rules that we don't adhere to, ourselves right or wrong. What example can they take? They're living in a space they fell out of place. They're living in a world they didn't make. Living in a world where grown-ups break the rules.
I think we just heard the cover.
Spoken word.
I'm wondering, as an artist yourself who has obviously so much respect and admiration for this album, what does it mean to take on one of those songs to try to make it your own? Because presumably you must have thought this album was perfection to begin mm-hmm. with. And so
absolutely.
There's a danger with any cover song of trying to displace the original, which I don't think that wouldn't be your ambition either, right?
Right. No, not at all. It's just because I didn't just study the song. Sometimes people just do covers because either the song or the melody hits them or the lyrics hit them. But because I understood what they were trying to do with the entire piece, it just gives you a sobriety. With it as you approach it. At the same time, they are the ones who inspired me to innovate. They were the ones that gave me the permission to expound upon an idea. So I always make sure I go back to the roots of what their intentions were. A lot of times the reason why we don't feel the truth in certain covers is because the cover came from a place that wasn't trying to be a hit. It was just from a sincere space in that artist's life or that band's life. Certain things were going on in the earth that caused that song to come about. It wasn't just, hey, this is cool. We're going to make a hit record. Hey. And that could be done, you know, but it doesn't resonate the same. So I approach covers as if I was there in Minneapolis with them, having those conversations while they were watching CNN, while they were watching what was going on in the world, and go back to what I felt like at that time or what I'm looking at in the news today.
How did you approach All Right? What was when you decided to do that, what goals did you have sonically?
Well, Lucrative, one of my producers and collaborators, had the track. I built upon that track, and it was so funky that I was just like, you know, it would be nice to see a take that was a guy's take on the song that had even more hip hop, neo soul.
Right.
I was actually trying to nod to Got Till It's Gone from Velvet Rope 1997 in some kind of a way, the neo soul aspect of it. Secondly, I love how the Jacksons layer, period, Michael and Janet, actually the DeBarges too, if you want to get down to it, like the way they layer their backgrounds is just unprecedented. The Carpenters, I'm sure, you know, had a major impact on Jimmy and Terry's vocal arrangements. Yes, the Carpenters, absolutely. Which is also a major influence on how I approach music in general. You know, I'm very, very connected to all things, you know, Carpenters, particularly Karen Carpenter.
Why do birds suddenly appear every time? they long to be close to you.
So I take all of those feelings and put them into the cover. So it's not just me saying, I like this song a lot, let me sing it. It turns into, let me respect it. Let me pay homage to it and yet also show another way that it can be expressed. It's kind of like clothes. The designer meant it for one reason, but you could flip it and throw some bleach on it and turn it into your own shit.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying?
We need to wrap up soon, but I don't think we can leave here without this one last question. And one of our future episodes that's going to air on Heat Rocks is with Martin Perna from Antibalas, talking about Michael Jackson's Off the Wall. And we ended that conversation by asking the eternal debate, Off the Wall or Thriller. And so for this episode, I feel like we need to ask Rhythm Nation, which to me was Janet's Thriller.
Yes.
Or Control, which was her Off the Wall.
Absolutely.
Morgan, I'm going to make you go first.
Tough crowd.
Yeah.
I love the conceptual nature of Rhythm Nation. Mm-hmm. I love that she was that woke at that time. I love what she was trying to say. I love that I could dance while getting my politics on. Right? However, Nasty, Control, What Have You Done For Me Lately? Funny How Time Flies. For me, it's Control. Love this, but Control is, for me, that was her start. That took her from kid to grown, blank woman. My mother's in the front seat, so I'm not going to say the whole thing, but it took her from kid to grown. It's groundbreaking, and for me, it'd be Control.
I feel like I already know the answer, but please, B, take it.
Well, of course, for me, it's going to be Rhythm Nation, but no one would have paid attention to a Rhythm Nation post Dream Street. Let's just keep it real. No, not that she couldn't have done the album, but I don't know if the audiences or consumers would have cared enough to hear her view on social commentary at that time in her career. They had to first believe her as an artist. That was the first and foremost, like, let's see what she does with this. I felt like Janet sang her ass off in Rhythm Nation because she had a point to prove. A lot of people were thinking that she didn't tour off of the Control record because she was afraid or didn't have the vocal pipes to do it. But if you listen to the Rhythm Nation album, if you ever had any questions on whether she could sing or not or sing out full from Chess Boys, that's the album that kind of like shut all of the critics down. And I'm going to go with Rhythm Nation because it's still to this day, it has not been duplicated. There's nothing like it. It's relevant. I like things that 30 years from now can still be applicable to what's going on in the rest of the world today. So that's my take on it. And I just want to say thank you to Jimmy and Terry and to Janet for this black kid right here. You made an impact on me.
Absolutely.
I could have went down the wrong road, but you showed me that music can make a difference. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing today. So thank you for this amazing opportunity to share a work that has shaped me as an artist. Thank you, guys. It really means a lot to me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We actually do have one more question.
We ask this of all our guests, and I know it's hard because we tried to do it ourselves last week and we were stumped. But Rhythm Nation in three words.
Then, now, forever.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
1814 for life.
Once again, a massive hand for B. Slade for bringing the knowledge.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And also, dude, please get his brand new album, which dropped Friday. I started with Risk. I can't get off Risk. And Let Me Find Out.
Yes.
But Let Me Find Out, you didn't check out this album. We're going to have a problem. It is a great, great album by a great artist. I'm so thrilled to be able to sit down with my colleague Oliver Wang and talk to one of my favorite artists about one of my favorite artists.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Ooh, shameless plug too.
Yeah, please.
You can follow me on my social media. Can you snap a little bit like this? BSLADE now. Follow me now. Follow me now. BSLADE now. Follow me. IG, Snapchat, Twitter. BSLADE now. Multidab now. Multidab now. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And the new album's called B Slade. So BSLADE. You can self-title.
another big hand for Brett Berg for doing these. Quick shouts out to our producer, Kara Hart.
Yay! Yay!
And our launch producer, Nick Liao, who came through
yeah.
today.
Yay!
Of course, thanks to all of you for coming out.
Yes.
This was amazing. We have to do more of these live episodes in the future. And on a personal note, it's my wife's birthday tomorrow, so
Yay!
Happy birthday, Sharon. What's your name?
Sharon.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Sharon. Happy birthday to you.
Yeah.
So that was our live show. Once again, we need to thank Brett Berg of the Voyager Institute, as well as resident downtown LA, for being such great hosts to us.
And of course, special thanks to B Slade for joining and dropping all kinds of Rhythm Nation jewels on us.
He was great, wasn't he?
He was dope, yo.
Heat Rocks is part of the Max Fun family and produced by myself, Morgan, and Kara Hart. And today's show was edited by me. Our theme music is Crown Ones by Thess One of People Under the Stairs. Thanks to him for letting us use it.
Be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at HeatRocksPod. You can find a link to our Facebook group on our webpage, HeatRocksPod.com. That's where we'll post show notes for every episode, including a track listing of everything you've heard today and more goodies. Again, that's at HeatRocksPod.com.
We want to thank all of our listeners who've taken out some time to say some kind words about us online, especially the 5-star reviews on iTunes. Shouts out to Matt Carr, 67 Verbal Math, and MNS2323.
Appreciate y'all. Every review helps, so if you have a chance, please leave one for us. Good to see you, Oliver.
Good to see you too, Morgan. Yeah.